The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Prices today, including food, rents, and gas, are up 8.3% from a year ago. Far more than wages, which are up 5.2% over the same period.
We just have a brand new update from the gas pump. Prices there hitting another record this morning. AAA says today's national average for a gallon of regular, $4.87. Look at that. That's up 25 cents from a week ago.
And it's not just high, it's just so much higher than it was such a short time ago.
As you said, the situation in California is far worse. 634 is the state average for regular. One gas station is charging over $10. You know, higher freight costs means higher cost to consumer goods.
Analysts right now are predicting $6 gas per gallon by Labor Day.
85% of Americans say that the current economy they rate is only fair or poor. That's the worst since 2012. And looking forward, the economic outlook getting worse. 77% say it's getting worse. That's the worst since 2009. So the high gas prices are part of a larger economic picture where Americans are really not happy at this point.
My plans are to produce the strongest, fastest, most widespread economic recovery America has ever experienced, with record jobs, new record small businesses, and wages rising. It's the foundation for an economy that works for working families. Because of that foundation, we're better positioned than any country in the world to overcome global inflation that we're seeing and reach a new chapter of stable and steady growth. So let's come together and focus on what's matter, on what matters. Let's build on the extraordinary progress we've made.
There's your fake president living in his alternate fake universe, I guess, going on and on about how great the economy is, even as the numbers around him, and they're covered by the major media, the legacy media, the communists in the media. Even they see how unhappy Americans are with what's happening in the nation, particularly with the economy. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you joining our growing audience. You can get to the live audio stream of this show through CRN Digital Talk Radio, Channel 3 on that platform. Every day they offer replays as well, so you can get to that, the audio stream there. You can get to the video stream, however, through our very own website. We offer it exclusively at thetrumpet.com. Just go to thetrumpet.com/live, and it takes you right to the live stream page, as well as, there's about 15 of the most recent programs posted on that same page as well, if you need to do some binge watching to catch up on your Trumpet Daily viewing. Yesterday we talked about the D-Day anniversary. Sam told me that Joe Biden tweeted out something with respect to D-Day at 8:45 p.m. last night. So he almost forgot. You don't want to let that get in the way of Pride Month, after all. But 8:45, and finally, here comes the tweet. Somebody, Biden was probably fast asleep by that point. So somebody in the administration said, oh, we better get something out about the Normandy landing. We ought to get something out about D-Day. And so they did, barely. They beat it by just a few hours. That's amazing. Last night, by the way, we had about the time that the tweet went out, we had the premiere of this summer's tour of Celtic Throne, right in Armstrong Auditorium. Nearly 600 people in attendance. So I think we sold something like 80 tickets in the last 12 hours or so before the show. So that's a nice little rush to the ticket booth at the last minute. Great show, great performance. Lots of tired performers this morning, I'm sure, that will be preparing for their road trip starting tomorrow. I think the stage crew is already off in motion this morning, but they'll be heading to Denver, Colorado. The Denver show, keep in mind, is Thursday evening, just a couple nights away if you live in the Colorado area. This is your opportunity to see Celtic Throne live, just go to the website, CelticThrone.com. That'll take you to all the tour sites and dates, and you can purchase tickets through the website as well. I think at present we've got about 450 scheduled to attend the show Thursday night, something like 500 up in Rapid City next Monday night. And the performers, by the way, they'll be performing at Keystone, South Dakota, I believe Sunday at noon. And then there's three performances, three 30-minute performances beneath Mount Rushmore. So that's Sunday afternoon and evening. And that's a way to promote the show. Hopefully we'll get some last-minute purchases for tickets because of those street performances or sidewalk performances. So that'll be happening all day Sunday. And then again, Monday night is the South Dakota performance. Next Thursday is Amarillo, so don't forget about Amarillo. I think we're up to 350 tickets that have been purchased for that one. We had about 600 at Amarillo last year. We had enough last year to prompt us to schedule another show in Amarillo for this year. You fly over Amarillo, and it really doesn't look like there's much there. Certainly surrounding the city, there's not much, just farmland, basically, but a really strong turnout last year in the panhandle of Texas. One of our viewers emailed this with respect to the economy. Gas is up to $4.79 today from $4.49 just last week. So 30 cents per gallon increase. Where does it stop? He says. Sanctions that affect oil hurt everyone. We've been paying more for natural gas as well. Two more years of Biden? I don't have words for that. He says he really should be impeached before another 2 years goes by. The world is hopeless. Nothing good happens anymore. Well, I mean, there is hope in God's truth. That's how we typically end each show with the Trumpet Daily. But you look at this world, and he's right about that. I mean, you look around, and there's nothing good happening. There's just nothing good happening, no matter how the illegitimate administration tries to spin this. And there are some helpers in the media, as I say, in most cases, even the media has to report some of these hopeless figures. But this is the New York Times trying to put a positive spin on inflation, as reported by the Washington Free Beacon. It says, according to the author of a guest essay published in the New York Times, the president's failure to get soaring prices under control might actually be a good thing. Well, this might actually be good as we transition our way over to green energy. It's free, after all. It doesn't help the Chinese. It doesn't help anybody abroad. It's just perfect. That's what they say. Says lifestyle journalist Annalise Griffin argues that the rising cost of meat and other animal products is a positive development for the environment. These radical lefties, they love it when costs for energy skyrocket, because they think, well, this is the only way that we can get people and fly over America to give up their trucks and to buy a Prius. It appears as if this administration, when you look at the activities of the January 6th committee, when you consider some of the executive actions that the Joe Bama people are making now, it appears as though they're really going to be acting desperately here these next few months, knowing what's coming in the midterm elections. They desperately want to transition to, again, green energy. And yesterday, the Obama people, I say Obama because he's the one behind it, but they announced this push, this national emergency, basically, to push toward or to transition toward a green economy, and one that would bankrupt Americans, of course. This is Sundance's take at Conservative Treehouse. It says, on the front side of the justification, the people in control of the Biden administration claim that current and future increases in energy prices are likely to do severe damage to the economy and the lives of all Americans. However, in the background of the issue, this is the never let a crisis go to waste phase of an energy crisis the administration has intentionally created. This is what they want. Listen to Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas. Listen to what he says about the way that Democrats think with respect to rising costs for energy. This is clip two.
It's not a priority because it's not a priority for Democratic politicians to bring gas prices down. Remember, this is exactly what Joe Biden said in the campaign, that we're going to phase out energy sources like oil and gas and coal. So for Democrats who have these Green New Deal fantasies, $5 gallon gas is not an accident. It's not an unintended consequence. It's very much the intended consequence. They want gas to be high because they want you out of your pickup truck or your minivan and want you to get into electric vehicles or scooters or mass transit or whatever it is that they ride around town in Washington.
But the thing of it is, they don't even ride around town in those scooters and electric vehicles themselves. Most of them are just hypocrites. They're like the four people who raised their hand at that WEC conference in Davos. How many of you drive electric cars? Oh, okay, about less than 5%. These people love to preach, but they don't practice it. They don't live it. Sundance says here, the real goal is to fundamentally transform the foundation of the U.S. economy away from fossil fuels and into a new era of clean, renewable energy. This is what all of the Biden cabinet officers now refer to as the economic transition phase. So they come out with the big statement yesterday saying, hey, we're going to go to green energy, we're going to go to solar panels, we're going to go to electric, we're going to do all these things, and we have to. It's an emergency. It says here, Joe Biden's executive announcement today, this is speaking of the one yesterday, is the triggering of increased federal government control over the United States energy system. That's what it is, a massive power grab. More government control. It says ideological government intervention, completely disconnected from the free market, is facilitated by the declaration of a federal national emergency. It's an emergency after all, and so we've got to act, and we've got to take these extreme actions. Listen to the White House press secretary as she tries to explain away the fact that this is really just going to benefit China. I mean, China's the one that makes all the batteries and the components for the solar panels and so on. Clip four.
On the solar panels, how is this not a gift to Chinese solar manufacturers, who many of whom operate with forced labor and are subsidized by the Chinese Communist Party?
You know, today's announcement is about one country and one country alone, and it's about the United States.
There she is again, looking at her script. She can't answer anything without reading. But she says no, it's not. The reporter, to her credit, says, "How is this not going to help China, the ones that make these solar panels?" And she just says, "Look, this is big for America. Forget about China. Just ignore China." That's what the media told us to do, by the way, with Hunter Biden's laptop. All of those disturbing connections, those financial transactions with the high and mighty in the Communist Party of China. Just ignore it. Just think about how great this is for America. Again, a lot of these are acts of desperation. Look at the way they went after Peter Navarro. He was on Donald Trump's staff. Put him in handcuffs. I think this was on Friday. Put him in leg chains. Harassment. Newsmax says here, absent a judicial order, he cannot lawfully be indicted for invoking executive privilege and refusing to reveal arguably privileged material just because a committee of Congress controlled by Democrats has voted that he should. So these radical Democrats, This January 6th committee, and they know they're living on borrowed time as well. They've just got a couple months left, so they've got to make a big splash here in the next few weeks, because they know when Republicans take control of the House in November, that'll be the end of it for the January 6th committee, trying to get as much, just to milk as much out of the January 6th insurrection hoax as they possibly can. says here, it's not enough to allow Navarro to appeal after the fact because information once revealed cannot be erased. He is obliged to claim privilege now and refuse to respond. That is not a crime. It is the constitutionally correct action. It says Peter Navarro's indictment violates several key constitutional rights, including due process, fair warning, and executive privilege. But who cares about constitutional rights? Who cares about the Constitution? These radical communists certainly don't. So they're acting with desperation because they know they're running out of time. Running out of time. Yesterday I played you a few clips from Naomi Wolf. She's got this new book coming out, The Bodies of Others. I'll remind you of one of those clips here in just a second. But this first from Axios, it says here, over 82 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines distributed across the country have gone to waste. 82 million. Can you believe this? It's just like government spending, isn't it? All of these programs, all of these schools getting funding for COVID, by the way, but they can't afford a security guard out front. Like they have all across Israel, by the way. It says here, 82 million doses going to waste. Since the start of the pandemic, according to data from the CDC and prevention, it says the vaccine comes in vials with multiple doses, but their short shelf life means that once a vial is opened, if it isn't used up quickly, it will have to be thrown away. It's such a short shelf life, you see, before it becomes... toxic? It's perfect. If it's unopened and it lasts for a while, then it's great for your body. Inject away! But then if something's opened or it's there on the shelf for a time, you got to throw it away. Well, I guess we can be heartened by that news. The fact that 82 million doses are thrown away. At least it's not going into a human body. Naomi Wolf's book, The Bodies of Others. That's what people are playing with. You know, that's what Governor Cuomo was playing with back during the nursing home scandal. This is from Ms. Wolf in her interview with Jesse Kelly, clip 7.
Pfizer knew that about 4 months after the rollout of the mass vaccination, there had been more than 42,000 adverse events. Oh, more than 1,200 people died. And four of those people died on the day that they were injected.
1,200 people died. This is according to the Pfizer documents. You know, in this interview, Twitter labels it misleading. She's going through the documents saying, Pfizer knew this. Pfizer knew people were dying. Pfizer knew about all these adverse reactions. Pfizer knew about myocarditis, particularly among young people. And yet they still were telling, hey, get your teenager injected. Give your teenager the jab. And then they come out 4 months later and say, oh yeah, by the way, there are these side effects. 4 months later, to say nothing of all of the lockdowns and what that caused. So many disturbing articles about the rise in suicide among young people. It's horrifying, obviously, no matter your age. But this Wall Street Journal piece, it's titled A Rise in Suicides by Young Children Leaves Families Searching for Answers. The lead in this article is about a little 10-year-old girl committing suicide. It says here, the number of children dying by suicide has risen dramatically in recent years. Parents, I mean, this isn't just directly connected to the lockdowns, but the lockdowns certainly didn't make it any better. It says parents often don't know that their children are having suicidal thoughts, new research shows. Among females ages 10 to 14, the rate of suicide more than tripled between 2007 and 2020. What is causing this? The rates triple for little girls. Says here, among males the same age, the rate jumped from 1.2 per 100,000 to 3.6. So here again, it's tripling among girls and boys. They're just killing themselves. And parents, as the lead of the article says, parents don't even know that they're discouraged, depressed, whatever it is. It says, although the numbers are tiny compared with the few of older adolescents and adults who die by suicide, it is now the second leading cause of death among children in this age group. So you've got the school shootings on the one hand. This is all that the communists will focus on, of course. And then you've got this, and it gets little or no attention. Little elementary age, barely out of elementary. I mean, what 10 years old, that's what, fifth grade? That's unbelievable. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, once said, in due time, parents are going to have to be brought to account for this neglect of their basic responsibility. It is a basic responsibility to raise up a child in the way that he or she should go, so that when they're old, they don't depart from it, as the proverb says. Read Ephesians 6, the first few verses in that chapter. It says here, this is from our booklet, Child Rearing with Vision. It says, for decades, an increasing number of news reports have revealed that our elementary and middle school-aged children are in serious trouble. Bullying, disrespect for authority, drugs, gender confusion, promiscuous sex, even with teachers, suicide, and bloody, murderous violence have invaded our public and private school systems. It says, who or what is to blame for this horrendous crisis? How do we solve this? What's the root cause here? Who's to blame for this? It says, we could point the finger at many things: our failing school systems, perverse music and entertainment, drug pushers, pornography, violent video games, and other modern maladies. But the stark truth is that the main cause for troubled children is troubled parents. Parental neglect is a root cause of children's problems today. That's the root cause. There are other factors, for sure. But the root cause is parental neglect. These things don't just happen. You don't just wake up and think, why did this happen to my child? There's a progression here, a deadly one at that. It says, too many parents are so self-absorbed and caught up in their own personal crises that they can't focus on the proper rearing of children. They just don't pay any attention to it. Mr. Armstrong says, family life has undergone a radical revolution. This is in The Missing Dimension in Sex. And then it leads into this quote I just gave to you. In due time, parents are going to be brought to account for the neglect of basic responsibility. See, we're all going to have to give an account, not even just for child rearing, but how we led our lives. I've been talking so much in recent programs about growing in the grace and in the knowledge of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, making progress, overcoming the battle against our adversary. I'll talk more on that in the second segment here coming up. But just to close out this segment, to return back to what Naomi Wolf is warning about. Obviously, there have been many others. Robert Kennedy with his book on the real Anthony Fauci. There's quite a few books coming out now about the deadly adverse effects or reactions to the vaccine, how that the lockdowns didn't work, the masks didn't work. This is from the New York Times, if you can believe this. The evidence suggests that broad mask mandates have not done much to reduce COVID caseloads over the past 2 years. And yet you'd never know it looking at some of the mask Nazis that insist you put it on, you strap it on, keep it on the entire flight. Some of this is finally being relaxed. Finally, 2 years in. And then the New York Times comes along, helpfully, I say that in jest, they come along and say, you know what, it actually didn't really do much. It actually didn't really work. This is a damning piece by the Daily Mail. talking about the people who've been injured or died even because of the vaccine. And yet, it's because it's the Daily Mail, I guess. I mean, they're more conservative than some. But because it's a mainstream publication, they'll report on the injuries, they'll report on even some of the deaths, but then they tell you in the same article that these vaccines are so incredibly safe. See, even they have been influenced by people like the Twitter police that say, even if you've combed through all the vaccine documents by Pfizer, still, you're being misleading if you say there's any danger at all posed by these drugs. The Daily Mail says here, the coronavirus vaccine is incredibly safe, but why is there no compensation for the unlucky few whose lives have been destroyed by the jab? See, they're just unlucky. It's just so rare. Well, Naomi Wolf, I just played you the quote. That even in the trial run period, they knew about tens of thousands of adverse reactions, including 1,200 deaths, including four that died the day they took the jab. They knew all about this, but they concealed it. They concealed it from you. It says 1 week after his first dose of the AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccine in March last year, the unthinkable happened to Richard Todman. The 60-year-old part-time employment judge from North London suffered catastrophic blood clots in his bowel. The condition can quickly become life-threatening as the clots can break off and travel elsewhere in the body, stopping blood and nutrients from reaching vital organs. It says within 3 weeks, Richard was dead. He took the jab and he died within 3 weeks. A coroner's report confirmed the cause. The jab triggered the clots that killed him. It must be said, such complications are vanishingly rare. So just so that you know, I mean, it's a gut-wrenching case that they lay out in painful detail. And then they reassure you that, look, it's perfect. It's perfectly safe. Listen to this. Despite the heartbreak, Deborah, that's Richard's wife, acknowledges that Richard's death was an anomaly. Even the wife. Oh, it would have been, remember the one story last year we read? The death, it would have been so much worse, so much more agonizing, were it not for the vaccine. The vaccine killed this guy. Richard never hesitated to have the vaccine, she says. As far as he was concerned, it was the right thing to do. He was very keen to have it. To keep himself and others safe. His death certificate, seen by the Mail on Sunday, reads, Richard Todman died from an extremely rare complication of the COVID-19 vaccine. Yet, according to Deborah, health chiefs have roundly failed to acknowledge that the COVID vaccine was to blame for her husband's death. So the NHS, I mean, that's a perfect system too, right? It can do no wrong. So even when the vaccine kills somebody, and the death certificate says it, the coroner confirms it, and the wife is saying, look, we're pro-vaccine. But she can't, and the article brings out more than one case here where people have tried to go to the health officials to just get some kind of compensation or even an acknowledgement that the vaccine did it. That the vaccine caused it. They can't get it. They can't get health officials to admit that that vaccine caused an adverse reaction like this. They just won't do it. Because they're the experts, remember. They know. They know what's right. It says a year on, she has yet to receive any financial support from the Department of Health. Can't get any kind of payout. After her husband, a big vaccine proponent, died within 3 weeks of taking it. It says Claire Hibbs, a 49-year-old construction officer from Hertfordshire, has not been able to work since getting the AstraZeneca vaccine in March of last year. 5 days later, the mother of two was fighting for her life in hospital with blood clots in her lungs and liver. It says doctors told her they believe these clots were caused by the vaccine. The incident has left her in permanent pain and suffering with debilitating fatigue. I applied in June for the vaccine damage payment scheme, but the solicitors told me not to hold out hope as I probably won't qualify as being disabled enough. You're not sick enough, the solicitors say. So you're not going to qualify. We're not going to even go there. Further on, it says, this is another individual. During his hospital admission, Tony's daughter, Natasha, 29, posted a picture of her father and a description of his condition on Facebook in the hope of finding others in a similar position. But she was shocked when the post was removed within 24 hours. The social media company flagged it as anti-vaccine message. You can't make this up. You can't make this up. She has a loved one who dies because of the vaccine, and the police, the fascists at Facebook, say, don't dare post about that. That makes you wonder, how many more cases are there like this that can't even get their message out because it's false or misleading information, say the social media police. And then Dan Pfeiffer comes along and says, you know, the real problem with social media is that they're not banning Candace Owens or Ben Shapiro or Dan Bongino. These people, as I said with the opening montage, they're living in an alternate universe. The truth, though, as I said yesterday at the end of the first segment, the truth is making its way out. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email some feedback to the show, you can write us at td@thetrumpet.com. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily.
A child is a miraculous blessing from God, an opportunity to build his family. In his word, God says to train them up in the way that they should go, so that when they are old, they will not depart from it. But how should you train up your child? Most parents do not know. Most parenting books offer only limited help because their authors do not understand the purpose and potential of your child's mind. As a result, millions of children grow up to be hopeless without any direction in life. Many come from broken homes. Many do not have a home. This is why so many young people become delinquent, rebellious, and unsuccessful as teenagers and adults. But you can rear successful, jubilant children and avoid the heartache of an unhappy and miserable home. God has outlined how to rear obedient children in His Word. Our free book, Child Rearing with Vision, will show you how to raise children that follow after God's abundant way of life. It will help you build a strong, united family. It will help you bring God's love into your child rearing. And it will guide you through the momentous journey of preparing your child to serve God the Father forever. Request your free copy of Child Rearing with Vision at our website, thetrumpet.com.
The Trumpet Daily.
Chapter 6 of this wonderful little booklet, How to Be an Overcomer. The sixth chapter is titled The Science of Spiritual Warfare. There is a science to our spiritual warfare, and my father in that chapter, he lists out helpful points for us to remember, the first of which we covered last week on the show, how important it is for us to maintain high morale in warfare. Morale in warfare is vitally important, it says in the booklet. Today, I want to focus in on the second point that's brought out in that powerful chapter in the Overcomer booklet. Notice Philippians 2 and verse 12 here to begin with. A well-known verse, a memory verse, the Apostle Paul here saying, "Wherefore, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, not as in my presence only," it says, "but now, much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling." So there's a lot for us to work out. But happy for us. I mean, God provides us with so much in the way of helpful assistance along the way, so much support from God's family, so much instruction, teaching. We're here to learn to be teachers, as I've been covering. And God gives us so much valuable instruction, revelation, in fact, all scripture given by inspiration from God. And we have it all. We have it all. What about God's Spirit, the gift of God's Spirit that He gives to those who are repentant and who believe and who've been baptized and who've received the power of God's Spirit? Verse 13 continues here. It says, "For it is God which works in you both to will and to do His good pleasure." God in you, God working in you, even giving you His will. And of course, we've got to submit to it. There is a cooperative effort that goes on here. Us, you know, voluntarily acquiescing, I should say. That quote that I think it's with one of my scriptures from the epistles class with respect to Ephesians 5. Just the role that we're in as Christ's wife. We've got to submit to God's authority. We've got to do our part to overcome and to conquer, but it's God in us that leads us to victory. It's God in us. It's God's will that we're to submit to. Hebrews 12 and verse 1, it says, "Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us." Sin is like heavy weights strapped to our ankles. I used to wear those when I got in shape for basketball back in the day. You take the weights off and you feel light-footed. You feel like you can really run. The sins that we have that we won't put away, they slow us down. They prevent us from really running this race. 1 Corinthians 9:24. I'll just read one verse there quickly. "Know you not that they which run in a race run all, but one receives the prize?" I mean, we're in a race. We're in a relay race, and we want to go for the prize. We want to go for the victory. Paul certainly did, and he talks about it in his final letter to Timothy, that he's finished. He finished the fight that he was in. He finished the course that he was on. He finished the race, and along the way, I mean, what helps us to really sprint to the finish line is putting aside the sins of the flesh, burying that old man, crucifying the old man. I've mentioned before this example in The Power of Habit. That's a kind of a self-help book written years ago, a few years ago. I forget the exact year, but the author there was writing about someone who really had, I mean, they reached rock bottom after a divorce and so many other things that took a horrible turn in their life, and they finally were, I think, hung over in a hotel in Egypt or somewhere and decided, "I've got to do something. I've got to make some changes." And again, this is an example of someone that's not even in God's family, not in God's church, that doesn't have access to the power of God, that doesn't have their mind open to the truth of God. But it's an individual, I think it was a woman, she made one change, I believe it was she stopped smoking. She just stopped. And the example that this author goes through is how that triggered more positive changes in her life, as her victory, in this case, her victory over the smoking addiction, started to build some momentum in her life. And she made some other changes as well. And most of them were with respect to her job and her physical health. But certainly those of us in God's church, as I've covered in a lot of recent programs, God brought us into this to change us. We call it conversion, baptism and receiving the Spirit of God, because it's God in us, converting us from a human being with all of the carnality and the carnal impulses that we have because of that evil nature, because of Satan the devil and his broadcast. God taking that and converting it into a God being who thinks like God, who has the nature that God has. What changes? What changes are we making to put away these heavy sins, these weights that slow us down? In The Science of Spiritual War, chapter 6, it says here, the way for us to develop high morale is to get our hearts into God's work. The question is, what prevents you from doing that fully? What is holding you back? What holds you back in your service to God? What holds you back in your obedience to God's commandments? It says here, this is God's work. It says, what holds you back from absolutely throwing yourself into it? It says, we should all have high morale. High morale, and inspire that in others. It says, do you inspire others to have high morale, or do you drag them down? Again, that's touching on the first point in this booklet, the first point in chapter 6, The Science of Spiritual Warfare. The second point, my father brings this out. This is on page 88. It says, you must have maximum concentration. In other words, you really have to bring focus to your spiritual life. And the way that you overcome weaknesses and sins, if you're going to put away a heavy weight, I mean, you've got to bring maximum concentration to that effort. Whatever that sin might be. Think about, again, going back to that previous example from that self-help book, think about, you know, what your life would be like, how much better it would be, how much more you'd be able to serve God if you just changed one bad habit. We've all got them. We've all got bad habits. We all do things that we wish we didn't. But why not change it? What might it be? I spoke with someone just the other day who talked about his laziness, his lethargy. On the positive side, I spoke to another church member who, when coming into the church, he had a smoking addiction, and he just went to God about it. He didn't think he'd be able to conquer it, but he went to God about it. He gave it up. He walked away from it, and he moved on with his life. It is possible to just put away those sins. Maybe it is a bout with laziness, or staying up too late into the night and consuming this world's entertainment, or maybe it's binge eating or addictions to coffee or alcohol, or I mentioned cigarettes. Maybe it's too much screen time. A lot of people have an addiction to screen time. There's plenty of people that have sex addictions in the world today, and you know, when you're coming into the church, it's like the Apostle Paul with the brethren at Corinth. I mean, you can read 1 Corinthians and see that this was, you know, this was a congregation that had to come out of a lot of sinful filth, heavy weights. And they didn't complete the task the moment that they stepped into the church. It is a process. But we've got to be making progress. We've got to be overcoming. We've got to be overcoming lust and wrongful sex addictions and perversions. We've got to be overcoming laziness and lethargy, stubbornness, resisting authority. We've got to overcome selfishness. Some struggle with intellectual vanity. They just can't humble themselves to receive God's truth. Whatever it may be, whatever it is, you've got to concentrate on changing it. You've got to bring maximum concentration to the effort. And again, I'm not suggesting it's solely a human effort. By any means, it can't be done. God, you can't recreate a God being or create a God being in yourself. God does that. That's the whole point that my father brings out in this book, particularly in the War of the Wills chapter. I'll get to that maybe at another time. It's God who's recreating himself. It's God who's reproducing himself. But how is he doing it? How is he bringing it about? And will you submit to it? Will you submit to his will? Will you let God have his way in your life? And if God says it, If God reveals it to you, if God says, look, this is the way you ought to live, you don't want to be addicted to this. You want to remember moderation in all things. You want to obey God and make sure that He's first in your life and that nothing interferes with you and your relationship with God. And if there is an interference, if there is something that's coming ahead of God, you've got to crush it with God's help. You've got to smash that idol. You've got to put it away. This is from David Chandler's book, The Campaigns of Napoleon. It says, one of the basic maxims of Napoleon stresses the all-importance of achieving maximum concentration of forces at the right place and time. In other words, on the battlefield. My father quotes from that book in chapter 6. You've got to bring maximum concentration of forces to confront that enemy, to face that enemy. Here's what my father said. When you have to tackle a problem, concentrate everything you have on that problem. Bring everything possible to bear on solving it. He says, do you lay siege to your big problems? A siege is a military blockade of a city or a fortified place intended to compel it to surrender. It is a persistent attack. To lay siege means to pursue diligently or persistently. How about preparing a siege against your laziness or your lust or sense of inferiority or vanity or whatever problem you face? Lay siege to it. Go right at the heart of it with everything you can master. Destroy its will. Decimate your old man's will to rise back up, and you will conquer it. That's how we can win battles against our serious problems. We've got to destroy its will. We've got to crush it out of existence. We've got to stop and never go back to it. That's the lesson of the Israelites coming out of Egypt. And sadly, for many of them, they got a few days out into their journey, and many of them said, nah, I think I want to go back. I think I want to go back into slavery. At least it was easy. I mean, we knew what was coming day in and day out. But out here, I mean, we're seemingly wandering around. We've got to put our faith and our trust in God. They didn't want to do that. They didn't have God's Spirit, the people of Israel. God's offering us His Spirit today. And it's not like the Spirit of God is just going to absolutely crush that strong desire for sin. But we can overcome. We can overcome those weaknesses and those sins with God's help, and we can go forward with Christ if we'll walk by faith. The disciples, remember that exchange in Matthew 19 where the disciples looked at Jesus and said, well, I mean, if this wealthy, educated man is, if he's not going to make it, how's anybody going to make it? And Christ said to them, with men it is impossible, but with God all things are possible. It is possible to go forward with Christ. But now we've got to bring, as my father writes, we've got to bring maximum concentration to that battlefield and really gather all of the forces, confront that enemy, and destroy its will. So you can't be half-hearted about it. I mean, you've really got to bring some energy, some intensity to this fight. You've got to bring some Christ-like confidence. You've got to be bold in faith. Mr. Armstrong, Herbert Armstrong, in a message he gave back in 1982, you're about to be jolted by this quote, this clip. But he was talking about just how there were too many brethren, too many people of God that weren't energetically obeying God in His way. Listen to this from 1982, clip 9.
I want to arouse you to think. We've been just taking things for granted. We've been just stupefied. We haven't been awake. And I wish some of you would show a little more energy, brethren. I wish you'd get a little more earnest about this thing. Do you put earnestness in your prayers? And I think most of you don't know how to get served up into earnest. But I tell you, it's going to take more energy, more drive, more dynamic energy than that. If I can put it in my 90th year as I've been doing, and I've been in my 90th year for almost a year now, how much more could some of you do? Could you stir yourselves up a little more than you have? Brethren, I only say this because I want you in the kingdom with me. And I'm beginning to wonder how many are going to be there.
That's very similar to some of the other warnings he was giving throughout the 1980s before he died in January of 1986. But there he is saying, you know, can we stir ourselves up a little bit more? God's offering us eternal life in his family. God is offering us. He's preparing offices for us, as we read yesterday, John 14, 2 and 3. He's preparing us to rule the universe. Read Hebrews 2. Read Psalm 8. Psalm 8, David says there, what is man that you're, why would you even be concerned about us? Why would you be mindful of us? He was blown away by God's purpose and plan. Now, David had a heart like God, as Acts 13 says, so he really showed some energy and some passion. He committed some pretty big sinful blunders. At times he had some pretty serious and heavy weights strapped on his feet, spiritually speaking. But when he repented, when he turned his heart to God, David went forward with Christ. David really ran, spiritually speaking. God wants us to bring energy and passion and hard work to our battle against self-love, self-centeredness, selfishness, vanity, all of these pulls of the flesh. 2 Corinthians 10 here in verse 3, Paul says, "For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war after the flesh." Ties right in with Ephesians 6. Put on all that spiritual armor. Just clothe yourself in the truth and wield that sword of the Spirit. Go to battle. And remember that we're not warring after the flesh. It's a spiritual war that we're engaged in. Verse 4 says, "For the weapons of our warfare are not carnal or physical, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds." I mean, you can really pull down a stronghold. You can crush a strong idol that's maybe camping out right in the center of your routine, your daily existence. You know what it is. If you don't know, ask God. He'll tell you. He'll show you. You can crush it. You can obliterate that obstacle with God's power. And go forward with greater speed and a greater sense of urgency in this work. Verse 5, it says, "Casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ." See, every single thought. Bring it into captivity. Bring it into obedience. Bring it into the obedience of Christ. Crush the will of that carnal attitude and spirit. Don't let the devil, he's broadcasting constantly. He's surcharged the air with his attitudes and moods, his impulses. Mr. Armstrong wrote at length about this. And we've got to disconnect from that broadcast. We've got to tune in to God's truth, to God's revelation, to God's understanding. We've got to plug into the Spirit of God. We've got to be obedient in all things. Bring maximum concentration of forces in your battle against sin so that you can lay aside those heavy weights and run with Christ. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to email the show, you can write us td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.